Oh, the joys of moving in, right? I mean, we're not trying to give you the impression this is a money pit or anything, all right? Because it really isn't. Though we connect with that a little bit this week. We're really excited you're here today. Welcome to the launch pad. My name's Kurt. I'm the lead pastor here at Crosspoint. If we have not connected or met before, I'd love to meet you after service today. And man, just super excited to be in this space. And if it's your first week with us, we are very excited you're here. As Eric said, we're kind of in preview mode, and we are in week number 2 of this series, hashtag Four Fishers. We're taking a look at why we're here, kind of recasting why this place, what's going to happen out of this place. And today is a very, very important service to us, in a sense. I mean, at least this is what I feel like this morning. I feel like it's like we've just wiped the slate clean, and everything's starting from scratch. We're starting brand new, fresh, and yet we're really not. I mean, there's quite a bit of infrastructure we're bringing with us, but that's what it feels like. So I'd like to do something here as we get going today, and we're going to lift the house lights. I don't know exactly how this is going to turn out, but I want us to see something visually this morning, the very first time we're in this room. And so if you're here today and you've been here, coming to Crosspoint for the last 2 years or less, if you've joined this tribe or visited for the first time in the last 2 years, if that means today is your first day with us, or you're a guest from out of town, or you've come in, go ahead and stand up. And we're not going to point you out or draw attention to you. I just want you to stand. Everybody's going to be standing by the end of the morning of this segment, all right? I just want us to see how many people have joined us either for the first time or over the last 2 years. Awesome. Isn't that cool? Now, if you joined 2 years before that, all right, if you came for the first time and began attending Crosspoint or got connected 2010 to 2012, which means you don't know what it was like to be here when we only had one service, all right? If since you've been coming to Crosspoint and you're still sitting and you only knew two services, go ahead and stand. That's our next segment of people, all right? Awesome, look at that. All right, now, third segment of people. If you were here, your first Sunday that you ever attended or checked out Crosspoint was on our grand opening weekend or after, all right? But you came during those first 2 years where we only had one service. Go ahead and stand to your feet. All right, see how many more people we get up out of the seats. Awesome. All right, look at this. Now, this is pretty cool. Now, what's really cool is if you look around you, the handful of people that are sitting in the seats are the original launch team that helped get this thing off the ground 7 years ago, had the vision, the foresight, the ability to see something that had yet to become anything. And we just want to thank you. So if you're still sitting, thank you. Now, it was only about 6 or 7, stay standing, 6 or 7% of people, I think, total stayed in the seats to this segment. Now, if you're sitting, I want you to go ahead and stand up, if you're an original launch team member. Because, see, here's the thing. You know, this is a really important Sunday as we start in this building, and it's a critical moment today because all of us here, whether you've come here for the first time, I mean, other than those of you who are maybe checking us out for the first time today, everyone else that's come at any point over the last 7 years, we've got a decision to make today, and the decision is whether we're going to continue to run hard after what God wants us to be or whether we're going to just start playing church. Because, you know, we got a comfy building, nice seats. I heard all about the seats this morning, by the way. Apparently, I talked long or something. But everybody's talking about the seats and, you know, sound system. I mean, kids' environments all the way around. And yet, we have a very critical decision the very first week we're in here. Are we gonna continue to stay hard after what God's called us to be? Or are we just going to start playing church and filling the seats and, you know, taking it easy? And so that's a question I want us to wrestle through today. All right? And it all starts today. So let me go ahead and pray for us. God, thank you for this place. You know, man, we have hoped and dreamed and prayed, and many people have sacrificed financially to help make this place, this concrete and steel and drywall and paint, come to a reality. And yet, God, that's all it is. It's literally a shell. And God, it's crazy because you met with us when we met in a school cafetorium that smelled like sour milk and broccoli every week. And so we believe that wherever your people are, you meet us there, and I just trust that you're going to do that again here today. God, I just pray that you would help us to see your passion and the things that make your heart beat fast today. I pray these things in your name and according to your character. Amen. Go ahead and have a seat. So today, as we saw in that short clip, money clip, we are unpacking. We've been unpacking this over the course of this week. And, you know, I don't know if you've noticed what we brought this morning. We had a few things you may have noticed in kids' environments if you checked in out there that came across the street. Very few things in here. You know what's interesting if you've ever moved is when you begin packing your stuff up, you realize how little you have. Have you noticed that? Like, oh my word, this is everything in one truck or in one, you know, one U-Haul. And it's crazy. crazy. And this past week, we actually had some leadership previews here in the building where we brought some of our leaders through, which, by the way, as we're unpacking, there are two guys here I just want to acknowledge this morning. We have Alan, and I'm not going to ask you to stand, but Alan and Brad are our two contractors. They work for our construction company, and especially, you know, Alan was very instrumental on the front end. Brad, I tell you what, he made it happen so you could sit in these seats today. So, Brad, thank you. And I don't know where you are today, but thank you for pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. I mean, this dude pushed and pushed and pushed. And, of course, we were pushing, and he was getting pushed, but he made it happen. So, Brad, thank you for that. You know, as we were having these previews this week, you know, people come through the building, they were like, you know, does it feel like Cross Point? That was the question. Does it feel like home yet? And I'd look around, and I'm like, man, I love it. It's amazing how close it is to what we designed. I mean, I remember seeing camera shots from the architecture phase, and it's amazing, you know, how our builders got it very, very close to what we're looking for. But if I'm honest, it hasn't felt like Cross Point. And you know when it started feeling like Cross Point? When you showed up this morning. When you showed up, because this place is not about stuff. It's not about, you know, equipment and kids stuff. It's about people. So I thought it was important. It'd be important today as we kind of start our first week in this place for me to remind us and kind of recast, if you will, some of the things that we're about as a tribe, why we're here, what hashtag Four Fishers means, how this has never been for us. I mean, I didn't need a place to sit in a cushy chair. All right. I mean, you know, it's cool. It's really cool. But really, this is a tool that we're going to be using because we believe God is about more than stuff. He's about people. And because God is about people, we want to be about people. And it's kind of weird because that's not the reputation of most people who align themselves with Christ. In fact, today, at any given moment through today, only about 20% of America is going to be in a church anywhere across our country. A few years ago, there's a book that I read that came out. A couple guys were trying to they did surveys. And they're trying to find out, you know, why people that don't go to church don't go to church. And so they surveyed, you know, a bunch of young people, and it was a book called Unchristian. And these guys were just trying to figure out the perceptions of people who generally don't, you know, grace churches on weekends, which is about 80% of our culture. And check out this quote from the book. I thought this was really fascinating. They said, in our national survey with young people, we found that the three most common perceptions of present-day Christianity are anti-homosexual, 91% of people said that Christians are judgmental, 87% of people said that, and hypocritical. Okay, hypocritical. It's like more than hypocritical. It's like you're at a hyper level at this on this, all right? Now, these big three were followed by some other characteristics as well, and they listed them. They said old-fashioned. They felt like people who align themselves with Jesus are too involved in politics, out of touch with reality, insensitive to others, boring, not accepting of other faiths, and confusing. And it was crazy because when I read this, I looked at this list, and I thought, you know, I don't see anything that Jesus was about. All right, why does it not say that the people who align themselves with Jesus are a blessing to their community, which is one of the things we want to be here? Why does it not say up there that people that look at people who align themselves with Jesus and they say, why aren't those people just radical grace givers? I mean, why is that not on the list? You know, why doesn't it say that people who align themselves with Jesus get angry about things like poverty? And in fact, this community got angry about poverty a few months ago. Some of you went on Fart Week, which we had around here. Some people went on Holy Week, the week before Easter. We went on Fart Week. We had people that ate beans and rice all week, and all the money they saved, they actually gave to people who were in poverty. We raised some crazy amount, like $12,500 that was exponentially reproduced to create like a $150,000, $200,000 investment, lifting people out of poverty, because we get angry about those things. But most people don't see that characteristic in people who align themselves with Jesus. And we can say, well, it's a media bias, you know, and the media is kind of tanked on Christians, and you know, maybe not, I don't know. We could debate that another day. But see, here's the thing. Here's the problem with this. The problem with this is that, you know, when you and I are perceived as these being our top qualities, that there's just something really, really wrong about that. In fact, if you were to do a precursory read of Jesus' life, one of the things you'd find is that Jesus has very, very little in common with religious people. Very little. All right? I mean, Jesus is always hanging around with people who were doubting. He was always hanging around with people who were the ruffians, kind of the rough around the edges. He's always hanging around with crazy people. I mean, doing crazy things. And this is very clear when you look through the authorized biographies of Jesus' life, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, known as the Gospels. And we're going to look at one of those today. We're going to look at the Gospel according to Luke. Luke was a physician. He's a guy who is a doctor, and he's writing. He's literally watching Jesus, and he's writing down what he sees. He's writing down what he thinks people are feeling, what they're experiencing. And this is a dude who's not creating barriers. This is a guy who's running to people. Luke's a guy who runs to people. So let's start our little journey in Luke chapter 5 and see what happens here, because this is really critical to what we're about here at Crosspoint. And we see Jesus hanging out with friends, and it's funny because the friends he's hanging out with, nobody likes him. They're always like, why are you hanging out with those people? And some of them were tax collectors, and tax collectors were like the despised of the despised. And basically, see, in Rome at that particular time in the first century, the Romans had to figure out a way to fund their empire. So the way they would do that is they would go out and get Jewish businessmen who understood the business infrastructure of the Roman culture, and they'd employ them to go out and collect taxes. And they'd send them out and they'd say, hey, we need this percentage of money from everybody who's common folk. Now, anything else you want to collect on top of that, take as much as you want from them. We just need this percent and you can keep the rest in your pocket. So as you can imagine, I mean, tax collectors are like the most despised of people at that particular culture. And yet Jesus is hanging out with these people. He's laughing with them. He's dining with them. And they're like, Jesus, what are you doing? You're befriending these people. All right, and so he goes up to this guy, a guy by the name of Levi, and he's hanging out in his booth, his tax collector booth, and he walks up to him and he says, hey, I want you to come follow me. Kind of leave this right here. Leave this. I want you to start running after people with me. Here's what it says in Luke 5. It says, and Levi made him a great feast in his house. So he invited Jesus over to his house, made a great feast, and there was a large company of, guess what? Tax collectors and others reclining at the table with them. So who do tax collectors hang out with? Other tax collectors, right? Who do the moralists hang out with? Other moralists. Who do churchy religious people hang out with? Other churchy religious people. Who do the anti-homosexuals hang out with? Other people who have anti-homosexual views. Who do the homosexuals hang out with? Other people who are homosexual. I mean, it's funny how, you know, we gravitate to people who are just like us. You know what Jesus always did? He was always around people who were not like him. That's who he gravitated to. Verse 30. It says, the Pharisees and their scribes grumbled at his disciples, saying, why do you eat and drink with the tax collectors and sinners? They're always grumbling. Why do you, and see, to eat and drink with someone in this particular culture was basically to say, hey, it was like a highest compliment. It's like, I want to get to know you. I want to connect with you. And they're like, why is he eating and drinking with people who are sinners and tax collectors? Jesus is like, hey, man, the moralists, their parties are no fun. I mean, the parties are here, right? I mean, you got to go to the tax collectors. That's where the fun is. And Jesus was always accused of hanging out with the partiers and the people who were sinners, and he had genuine friendships with them. Verse 31, it continues. Jesus answered them, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous. Righteous is those who are already right with God. I've come, but for sinners, to call sinners to repentance. What is a sinner? A sinner is somebody simply that's missing the mark. A sinner is somebody who simply says, hey, man, my life is not all together. And I've got some problems, I've got some issues. One of my babysitters, I think, this week said, we're a functional, dysfunctional family, so we fit in that category. You know, we got issues, we'll have it all together. Really, it means all of us. I was watching PBS a while back, and there was some show, I think it was a Ken Burns special on like the World War II saga. And anybody see that, by the way? Anybody? No? Okay. There's this one episode, it's kind of fascinating. I didn't watch the whole thing, I was just flipping through because we only have like 10 channels. And so I was getting through, and this guy was talking about when you're on the battlefield in World War II, he said, when somebody gets hit on the battlefield, you know what they yell out? They're like, sweetie! He's like, no, they don't yell that. They don't yell for their sweetie. They don't yell for their mom on the battlefield. You know what they yell out when they're on the battlefield and they get hit? They're like, medic! Medic! That's the only word they cry out. If they get hit, they cry out medic. And what Jesus was saying here is people go to church and get all religious-y, and they think, man, I got my life all together, and I'm all good. I have no perceived needs. I don't need any help. And Jesus is like, no, I want to be about people who realize, man, I need some help. I got some stuff going on. My life is not all together. I've been hit. I need a medic, medic, medic. Maybe you've been hit and it's put you in a place of poverty, or maybe you've been hit and it's put you in a place where your family is broken, or maybe you've been hit and it's put you in a place where you have an addiction that's just got a hold on your life, or maybe you have absolutely everything, everything that you got scads and scads of stuff around you, and yet there's still something missing. You're like, man, I've been hit. I need something. There's something missing. See, Jesus continued to come up against this all the time. All the time he was getting criticized. I mean, is there anybody in your life that you hang out with that's different than you, that you would get criticized for? Is there anybody that you hang out with that votes differently than you? Oh, man, I didn't know you were talking about that girl, man. You know, you're like pulling signs out of people's yards. You're like, they're different, you know. Never going to invite them over. You know, I mean, you know, who is that? Listen, Jesus always had criticisms thrown. We have criticisms thrown our way here at Crosspoint. I mean, some of our biggest critics have come from, you know, what I would call the religious community who just doesn't want to understand. I mean, we got slammed at a big conference a few years ago with the kind of the independent, we're an independent church, part of this independent group, and some of the big wigs slammed us, you know, for just having fun and trying to help people who don't know Jesus see Jesus. They're slamming us. But here's the thing, they don't get what we're doing. They don't get that it's only when you make connections with people and get involved in their life that it actually begins to make sense. You know, when I invite somebody to Crosspoint, as I did this past week, one of my neighbors, I said, hey, you know, when are you going to come to Crosspoint? And, you know, it's not that I just want Crosspoint to get bigger and bigger, all right? You know, and as much as I think that I know or can explain the Bible or Jesus to people, or, you know, is good as or bad a communicator as I may be, I realize that my voice isn't always the only voice that's going to help somebody to see that. And so, you know, it's one of those things where I want to be able to bring my friends to this place so they can walk in and go, oh, man, you know, they maybe hear music or see art or, you know, they connect with some media piece and they're like, oh, that makes sense. Or, you know, their grandkids, her grandkids, you got to peel them away from our kids' environments because they don't want to go home. I mean, that's why I love the opportunity to bring our friends to a place like this, you know, and I can sit back and even other people can teach at times and be like, oh, yeah, what she said. Yeah, friend, listen, this is what I've been trying to say to you, but she said it so much better. You know, the cool thing is this is a team. Crosspoint's a team, and we've created an environment for people to come, and they can hear from different voices, different modes of communication, and this is just one of the ways that we run after people in our community by creating a place like this for them to come and maybe see Jesus for the very first time. Who in your life do you need to invite into this kind of setting? Who do you run after that's maybe different than you? Or maybe it's you. Maybe you're here for the first time, and maybe you're just realizing for the first time, Jesus actually pursues me. He actually didn't run to hurl things at me. He just runs to embrace me. So Jesus is always getting criticism. All right, let's take a look here. Again, he gets it. Luke 15, verse 1. It says, now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered. Love this. They're grumbling. They're like, this man welcomes sinners, and he eats with them. Don't you love that word muttered? I mean, hey, don't you love muttering? You can't wait to be around people who mutter, right? Let's just mutter for a moment, because muttering is so fun. Just say mutter out loud 5 times. Ready? Here we go. Mutter, mutter, mutter. Oh, yeah. I can't believe he's hanging out with people drinking Bud Light. I mean, he's got 50 Cent on his iPod. Can you believe that? I mean, you know, it's like we mutter all the time. We're like, you know, we're constantly complaining, out with prostitutes at Jesus. Can you believe it? And Jesus is like, is there a problem here? I mean, hello, have we not gone over this before? I mean, have you not seen consistently that this is what my life is about? And so Jesus, he pulls out the big guns. He pulls out the big guns and he says the same thing 3 times, 3 different ways. All right, 3 times in a row. Now, if you're in advertising or marketing, you know this is the rule of three. All right, you see this in commercials where there's like 3 problem scenarios and then a solution, right? So it's like, you know, hey, is your hair, you know, do you feel like your hair is dry? Do you feel like your hair sticks together after you shower? Do people puke when they look at your hair? Well, then try the new improved, you know, formula of, you know, whatever it is. You know, it's a marketing strategy. 3 times, bam, bam, bam. So Jesus goes after this 3 different ways. And he tries to drive the point home, describe the problem. The first, he says, is it's like a woman and she had 10 coins. And one day she realizes, she's counting her coins, she's like, oh my word, I lost one. I lost a coin, one's gone. And so what does she do? She's like, oh my word, I got to do everything I can to go find my coin. You know what she doesn't do? She doesn't look at it, and you and I wouldn't do this either and say, oh man, well, I mean, I still have 90% in my pocket, that's good enough. No, she goes around and she digs and she goes in the couch and pulls up Cheerios and all kinds of stuff and goes under the couch. I mean, she does an all-out search until she finds her one coin. In January, I think it was, during one of the big snowstorms, I had to pull one of the Crosspoint trailers back to the lot because we'd unload a whole bunch of equipment, and it was snowing. It was like 20 inches of snow on the ground, and I get out to the place where we park our trailers, and I'm like uncranking it off the back of my truck, and you know, I lay the keys and the access card to our lot down on my back bumper. Keep cranking. Knew it was a bad idea. Keep cranking. You know, I'm like freezing my butt off out there, and as soon as I get the trailer unhooked and chocked, I like jump in my car and drive off, right? I don't realize that I don't have my keys until I get home, and I'm just freaking out. You know, have you ever lost something like that? Because, you know, when you lose something, you don't want like a different set, right? I mean, you don't want a similar set. What do you want? You want your set, right? And so, I mean, I just this past week, I was going to the trailer lot. I'm still driving. Every time I drive up Greenfield Drive, I'm like looking. I saw something white on the side of the road. I'm like, those may be it. I'm trying. You know, I'm still looking for my keys. You know why? Because when you lose something of value, it grieves you. And Jesus says that's what God is like. When he loses something, it grieves him. You put everything aside, the 90% aside, to go after the 10. Jesus is looking around at the people he's trying to get this. He's trying to help them understand this. And he's like, you're still not getting it, are you? It's like, all right, another scenario. There's a shepherd. The shepherd has 100 sheep. He has 100 sheep, and he's bringing them all into his pen. He starts doing a head count, and he begins to realize, oh, my word, one of them's missing. I've only got 99. And so what does he do? He goes out after the one. He leaves the 99 and goes out after the one. You know what he didn't do? He didn't stay in the pen and, like, talk and say, man, it's really good to have you here. I'm really glad that you stayed in the pen and followed the rules. Man, if the one would have done that, man, he would be better off. He didn't do that, did he? You know what he did? He left the 99. He went out to find the one. And you know what happens when he finds it? And listen, this sheep is lost, but lost doesn't mean stupid, all right? Lost doesn't mean like they forgot Google Maps, all right? Lost means that this sheep is disconnected from the life-giving source. It's disconnected from the life-giving community with the shepherd. And when the shepherd goes out and finds it, he says, there's going to be more rejoicing over this one sheep that was found than over the 99 who kept the rules. Jesus looks around. He's like, you guys getting it? You getting it? And they're just like looking dumbfounded at him. He's like, all right, well, I tried an inanimate object. I tried an animate object. All right, let me try something with a little more investment here. So he's like, you know, we did 10 and that didn't work. We went for 100. Let's go down to 3. So he's one more story. He's like, let me tell you one more story. This has become known as the story of the prodigal son. But what's interesting about that is Jesus didn't call it that. There's nobody in the Bible that talks about that. Sometimes you see it in the Bible referred to as the loving father. Other times it's referred to as the religious tight anal brother. All right, there's 3 different people in this story. All right, so here's how the story goes. This is rapid fire succession. Story 1, story 2, problem, 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 solutions. All right, this is what he's trying to do. It's power of 3. So here's what it says in Luke 15:11. It says, there was a man who had 2 sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So he divided his property between them. So this is a dad who goes to his son. He's like, Dad, I want my money, and I want to leave. Hope to never see you again. And in Middle Eastern thought, I mean, for a son to go say this to his father is basically like saying, hey, Dad, I wish you were dead. I wish you'd just die off so I can get my inheritance. And in essence, I mean, let's be honest, this is what America does all the time, right? Man, God, just give me what I want. I want what I want. I want what I want. I don't really care what you have for me. I'd rather have everything I want more than you. And all the things I'm passionate about, all the things I really want, I'd rather have all of that, you know, God, more than you. And God ultimately is a freedom giver. I mean, God, you know, and God is kind of portrayed as the father in this story. And so the father says, all right, son, listen, if that's what you want, here you go. Here's your inheritance. So the son, he takes it, he goes away, he spends it all on women, wine, and song, and you know, all of a sudden he blows it all, and the market takes a downturn, and you know, all his stocks and holdings that he has, they're nothing. I mean, they're gone. There's nothing left in them, and all of a sudden he's forced. His son has nothing. He's out on his own. Everything he had is blown, and he's hungry. He has nothing to eat. He's no place to live. So he begins to hire himself out as menial labor. All right, I mean, he's actually feeding pigs, all right? I mean, now get this is crazy. This is a Jewish boy, you know, feeding unkosher pigs. That'd be like a fundamentalist around a porn set, all right? I mean, that's how crazy that is. All right, so he's so hungry that he goes out and he's feeding pigs, and he's so hungry, he starts eating the food that he's supposed to be giving to the pigs. He's like, man, I'm so hungry. All of a sudden it hits him. He's like, you know, I'd be better off if I went back to my dad. I mean, my dad, at least I'd have a roof over my head. So he begins to head back. Luke 15, 19 says, I'm no longer worthy. He goes back to his dad. Here's what he says. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. So he got up and went to his father. So he's like, man, I'm going back. I just want to eat. I mean, I'm about ready to die here. I mean, imagine how humble you would have to be. Imagine how destroyed, how broken down, how humiliated you have to be to go back to the father that you told, Dad, I wish you were dead. And to the tight anal religious brother too, right? I mean, the older brother. I mean, you got him to face too. The guy who always did everything right, always made the right decision. I mean, he's going back and eating crow. And he begins to turn around. So he's like, if I just go back, he begins to turn. See, this is called repentance. We broke this down a few weeks ago that repentance isn't just a thought. It's where I actually begin to take an action to make a change. And so he begins to put action. He begins to walk back to his father. Now, we don't know what his dad's been doing. We don't know if every day his dad's been sitting on the front porch, you know, watching, scanning the horizon, just hoping to see his son. He knew the gait of his son, hoping to see his head start bobbing across the field. We don't know. We don't know if every week the dad would go out on a search and rescue, and he'd gather all of his friends, and they'd go out and look at every nook and cranny in the community, looking at, my son is lost, I need to find him. We don't know. We don't know everything that took place in this time span. All we know is what Jesus tells us happens next. Verse 20. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him, and he was filled with compassion for him. So he ran to his son and threw his arms around him and kissed him. So his dad sees this broken, battered, humiliated person. His dad sees him. His dad's a loving father. His dad sees him. This kid who said to him just not too long ago, Dad, I wish you were dead. Screw you. I just want my money. Let me leave. And he goes. And he begins to move toward him. And now listen, in that culture, people would have been wearing like tunics, right? So he would have, like, picture him pulling up his tunic and tucking it in his belt. And he just starts running asses and elbows all over the place. Elbows, at least. And I mean, it's like you just see the rear end and everything. It's like everything's exposed. And everybody's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Jewish dads don't run. Jewish dads don't run. Now, here's the interesting thing. This is the only time in all of the Bible we see God depicted as running. Right? And understand, he's not running to kill people. He's not running to shout moral commands at somebody. What's he doing? He's running to a son who's disconnected from the life-giving source of home. And he runs over to him and he places a signet ring on him. The signet ring signified that, hey, all is well. Everything's good between us. He's like, hey, get that fattened calf. Let me give you my robe. That calf we've been saving for a big celebration. Go kill that thing. It's time to party. It's a happy day. I mean, they'd be playing like, you know, a little happy day song, dancing. I mean, it's like, all right, all is well. Happy ending to the story, right? Well, to some degree. But see, here's the thing. We still have to deal with the tight anal religious brother, right? Because, you know, the tight-anal religious brother, he's the one that kept all the rules, right? He's the one that stayed back. He's the one that always did the right thing. He's the one that always went to church. He's the one who was always around God, at least publicly, all right? This person is physically present and yet very distant to the heart of God, which, listen, some of us, we're physically around God, but we're physically around God, but we're spiritually distant. Our hearts are not tender to what God's heart is about. See, you can be physically present anywhere you want. I mean, but that doesn't mean your heart's tender to what God is about. And the brother's like, he's so high on himself. He's so like, hey, look at me. I kept all the rules. I've done everything right. I've never broke any rules. You know, and he gets his dad aside. He's like, Dad. And he pulls him aside, and here's what he says. He says, look, all these years I've been slaving. He doesn't say working. He doesn't say, Dad, I've enjoyed my time with you. He says, no, I've been slaving, which that's what you do when you do religion for the wrong reasons. It's just slavery, right? You just go through the motions. He's like, I've been slaving. His heart's not in the right place. He's like, I've been slaving. I've never disobeyed your orders. I've never dishonored the Ten Commandments. I mean, this is what he's saying. Yet, you never gave me even a young goat or a keg to have a field party that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him? Dad, what are you doing? What are you doing? What's up? What about moi? I mean, I've been here. I've been around. I've never done anything to dishonor you. And this is what you do for your son who wasted your money? And you know what the dad does? The dad looks at him. He's like, oh. He's kind of like, bless your heart. You don't ever use the phrase, bless your heart. You're kind of like saying, you sorry little, you know. He's like, bless your heart, you know. He's like, you just don't get it, do you? He says, my son, the father said, you are always with me. Everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and now he's found. A few years ago, we were vacationing on one of our summer vacations down in the Carolinas island called Dufusky Island that we like to go to for a week or two each summer. And our third child, Maggie, was just learning to swim. She was like 4.5 or 5, and it was like those moments where you could get the life vest off of her when you're in the pool with her, you know, because you're close enough to grab her if she started struggling. And so she's just learning to swim, and she's getting her confidence up, and yeah, she can barely keep her head above water, right? And so it was really cool because we were staying with my brother and his wife and a couple of our friends, and we're near this house that had a pool, literally, right? You know, it had a pool right off the back patio. And so, you know, every morning the kids were like, oh, we can eat breakfast and swim at the same time. And they're so excited about that because I guess we don't do that at our house. And so, you know, so we're out there. It's like 8 in the morning, 8:15, and I'm sunscreening, you know, the kids up. And all of a sudden, you know, nobody's in the water yet, and all of a sudden there's this big kapoosh. You know, and I look up, and I've got, you know, my son right here, and I'm sunscreening him. I look over, and here's my oldest daughter, and the third one's gone, right? Maggie, the 4.5-year-old, she's in the water. She forgot she couldn't swim without her life vest. And by the time I even see her over the hedges, like, she's already flailing, and her nose is barely above water. She's probably in 5 feet of water. I mean, I jump over, you know, I do like a O.J. Simpson, and I jump in the water, and, you know, I'm fully clothed, and I'm get in there, and I grab her, and she's gasping for air, and I get her to say, she wasn't dying, I mean, she just, you know, had a hard time breathing, she had a little water in her mouth. Got her over to the side of the pool, and I said, I'm like, Maggie, what are you doing? Are you okay? And by the way, in the meantime, her older sister sitting on the side the whole time doing this, swim! Maggie, swim! As if, you know, just a little encouragement was going to help the job get done. As if all she needed was a little instruction. Hey, just do this! You know, and but isn't that what older brothers and sisters do? Right? They never jump in and help. They never engage. They never actually roll their sleeves up and get involved. You know, they never get involved with people with addictions. They just stay where they are and bark out commands. They're always barking, hey, swim, come on, you can do it. And ultimately, over time, they end up just a bunch of bitter religious people barking commands from the sideline. You know, Crosspoint, we want to be about what Jesus is about, which is running after people. When we see people walk through our front doors, we realize a couple things. We realize that, you know, sometimes people just come to check us out. Sometimes people move into the area and looking for a church. A lot of times, we've been here and so have other people, and they're drawn to God in times when there's trouble, tension, and transition. Sometimes tension can be good. Sometimes transition is good, but a lot of times it disrupts our life, and we begin to say, okay, you know, maybe God has something to say with what I'm dealing with right now. And we run to those people. That's why we create an environment like this. You know, we create a room that has darkness. You know, we have music that's helpful to them. You know, sometimes people are like, oh, man, why don't we just play some good old churchy music? And I'm like, no. You know why we don't play that? Because my friends hate that music, and so do I. All right? I mean, we don't like it. I mean, I want something they relate to. All right? So we create environments where they can come and understand. Kids' environments where the kids want to run to their environment because they can't wait to see what happens. Great coffee. You know, a dark room so that, you know, if God begins to connect with you and you maybe get a little emotional or you just have a spiritual moment, you don't feel like everybody's looking at you. Loud music so you can sing, but nobody hears you if you have a bad voice. Right? I mean, we do whatever it takes to run after and create environments for people to see that there's a God that runs after them. And so, this morning, as you look around, you've been with us before, what we brought, there's not much. In fact, I just walked in the door a few minutes ago, and it was you. I mean, all we have is people. And we want this tribe to be a tribe who runs and continues to run after Fishers and Carmel and McCordsville and, you know, LaPel and Fortville and Anderson. I mean, all the communities around us, a place where people can come and maybe for the first time see Jesus for who he really is. And every single one of us have a decision to make on that today. I mean, if you're here for the first time, then, you know, you get a free pass on this. The rest of us, you know, you have a decision to make of whether I'm going to continue to be about what God wants Crosspoint to be about, or if we're just going to start playing church. So I want you to take out your connection cards. This is something Eric asked you to fill out earlier today. And if you're newer with us today, every week we give you some next steps on the back, some things that might be the next step in your spiritual journey. And usually there's ones across the board, wherever you might be. First one on here. You know, maybe you're here for the first time. You're like, man, I kind of dig this. Maybe you don't agree with everything or like everything, but there's something that's connected with you. Maybe your next step is just to simply say, you know, next week I'm going to return. I'm going to try it out again. We'd love to have you back. We consider it a privilege that you're here today. Maybe you have somebody, maybe you hang around with a lot of the same people that think like you, that, you know, have the same moral ideas as you, vote like you, and you need to break out of that and maybe go to places where you might get criticized a bit. That's where you're going to find Jesus. Maybe you need to start praying and inviting them to join. Maybe you've done all you can to help them understand Jesus, but you need to bring them into the context of team where they can hear music and see media and kids can experience things and they can go, oh, I get it. I see it. There's a lot of ways to run here. I mean, there's a lot of people that run to make this place happen every week. You know, if you're a volunteer around here and you serve two times a month, I just want to say, way to go. Thank you for running. Hat off to you. You know, if you're not currently in a volunteer role and you call Crosspoint your home, fill out that volunteer ramp-up card. Pick an area. And there's all kinds of places to make a difference, to roll your sleeves up, to get on the ground with people who was like powerful. With people who need somebody to run alongside them. Fill out that card. Sign up for a first serve. We'll see if it's a good connect for you. You know, if you're somebody who helped fuel this place financially, thank you. Thank you. You know, you're just doing what God's called you to do and asked you to do. And if you're somebody who's benefited from this place, maybe it's time for you to say, hey, I want to financially fuel. That's why we have joy boxes. Yeah. You know, these are all the ways we run, because we want to see the people in our lives come to a place where they can see Jesus and meet Jesus and experience Jesus in a way that maybe they've never had the chance to do. So I'm going to encourage you over these next few moments to mark your next step. Say, God, what is it that you're wanting me to be about as we enter chapter 2 of Crosspoint? And I want to pray for us as we process that. God, thank you for this place. Even for the interruptions, the kinks, the things we're working through this morning. Gosh, we've been in a cafetorium for 7 years. I mean, it's, you know, you definitely can meet us in this place amidst some of the things that are distractions. God, this is a pivotal moment. It's awesome to be here, so excited. Yeah, this is a pivotal moment of deciding whether we're going to continue to chase after the things that you chase after. So God, I just help you, ask that you help every single one of us to see our role in what you're doing here. God, nudge us, prompt us. Just help us to see in these next moments that you're a God who runs. And maybe there's even somebody here today who, for the first time, is seeing that man, God doesn't come and actually condemn me. He actually runs to throw his arms around me. Maybe for the first time, you are ready to say, God, I want to receive your grace. I'm a bad person, man. I've done some bad stuff. I didn't think that you could ever accept me, but I'm realizing that you're a God who does everything possible to meet me where I am. If that's where you are, just tell God that. Just pray and say, God, I want to receive from you today. I want to receive your grace. I want to receive your leadership in my decisions this week as I work and as I interact with my family. I just want you to begin to guide me. It can happen for you today.